Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
And Kate.
Welcome to Med Crimes.
Appropriate. So I edited it out, but you should have heard the coughing.
So we're back.
We literally are.
It's been like a minute since you and I recorded.
It's been a minute.
For you guys, it's been 2 weeks. But I mean, if you recall, we said we were busting out some stuff in a day.
Yes. And no YouTube today.
We were not feeling pretty.
No. And you know what? We are pretty. And like that doesn't matter.
Correct.
But we just don't have the bandwidth for it. And that's fine.
Yeah.
We're just not feeling it.
The clothes are not doing it for me today.
No, the bras are a problem. Like there's a lot of just things
they are
that are
not supportive. Kate is very supportive.
I
and
do
so
try.
Is Cecilia for so bringing me these cough drops. However,
for those of you that don't know, Cecilia is my almost 9-year-old daughter. But here we are.
Since our last episode came out, The day that our episode came out was the day that Kate and I traveled to New York City.
Yes.
Which was a huge feat on a couple ends. One, we were accepting a national award, which was really, really cool.
We are actually really psyched about it. And it was kind of a big deal, more so than I realized at the time.
Yes, it was a big deal. Mm-hmm. Second of all, Kate drove us into Long Island.
I did.
And she was petrified.
I was.
This girl had plans for us to like drive to Hartford, catch a bus, go to this place and then get an Uber.
Anything to avoid me having to drive. Like, so I'm like a competent driver, I think. But I've just like born and raised in New Hampshire, have never actually driven into like
any
huge.
Some of our towns barely have a stoplight.
Exactly. So like I was kind of like thinking and having being someone who's never really been to New York, thinking like, oh, I'm driving to Long Island. That means I'm going to be driving through traffic that's essentially like driving through Times Square, which is not the case. Any of you who live in the area know that. Basically, you go over a bridge and then you're in like a residential area, and it was super easy and not a big deal at all. So
it was
anyway,
great.
I learned a thing about driving.
You handled it like a boss.
Thank you.
You did great.
Thank you for every like half hour, like reaching over and touching my arm and saying, you're doing great.
Yeah, I was so supportive that day. I was
she
so
was such
supportive.
A great co-pilot. I'll tell
and
you.
Thank you to the QIO, the Quality Improvement Organization that recognized the work for our building.
Yes.
Yeah, we ended 2023. With a very low rehospitalization rate,
yeah,
you know, and which is huge. Everybody has certain metrics that they're judged by, and our ability to keep our residents and our patients in the center and not have to just ship them back to the hospital, is one of them. And we were honored for our improvements, and it was awesome.
Yeah, it really was awesome, and it's awesome for
we're
our
kind
residents.
Of a badass team.
We are kind of working really well together, and
Let's face it, skilled nursing homes are not just the sleepy little nursing homes that they used to be at one point in time. And we're getting a very sick people.
We are. There's a lot of people.
We're getting very sick people.
Getting IVs and imaging and labs and titrating things. And, you know, it just is a lot. We could talk about all of these things for the next hour and just like keep talking about
we
all
do
these
have
things.
To get to certain particular details
we
and
do.
That is our Patreons.
Hey,
some of you have probably been waiting for quite some time because we did record a month ago.
We did,
and we said hang tight, we won't forget you.
Yes. So we have Haley Hodges, a double H. I love it.
Laura, not unlike H.H. Holmes.
Okay.
I'm on it tonight.
Do we want to be like H.H. Holmes?
No, I said not unlike him.
Oh, I thought you said, yeah, not unlike means
oh,
like.
Oh, wait, not like him.
Yes.
Double negatives. I'm okay. Not good with this.
There you go. Devin's cleaning it up. She's,
I'm not
she's
on it
doing
tonight.
Great. We have Laura McNally.
Laura.
Thanks, Laura. Mary Benayet, I think is how you say
oh,
it.
Oh, hi, Mary.
Hi. Karen Christie.
Ooh, double first name. I like it.
And then we have the single first name, Nina.
Badass Nina.
Rare Nina.
Nina.
Love that. Julia Schwarthoff.
Hi, Julia.
Hi, babe. And last but certainly not least, Melanie Welch.
Melanie Welch, you guys are amazing. That is so many Patreons. I mean,
we are so blessed. It's like ridiculous.
We are 3 years into this.
What is going on?
Your support is just so, so, so amazing.
So appreciated. I can't even begin to tell you, you know, how we are so there are times when we are kind of talking about, okay, like planning for the next episode, and it's like, whew, like we're both exhausted. We both have a lot going on. We both have families, and it's like,
I didn't want to put on a real bra tonight.
She did. She really didn't.
But
and you know what? She didn't. And her tits are up and out, and it's fine.
Oh, dear Lord.
But you know, you guys are such a motivator, and just the love that you guys share with us every time.
And I really hope that for those that have been Patreon since the beginning and those that are just joining as Patreons, all of you, like, I really hope that you are seeing the value in your support, that from episode one, way back when with Charles Cullen, to now, that the quality is different.
The quality is
and
better.
And it's just a better show.
Yes. And it's because of you guys.
And you keep us going.
You really, truly do. Speaking
Speaking of Charles Cullen. We've kind of talked about a little bit going back.
Right. So
go ahead.
We've talked about this before, but so Charles Cullen was our first episode, and it was
we had no idea what we were doing.
We really didn't. We had like these little microphones. We were just like on a really crappy, outdated laptop with like terrible software. I was kind of like, let's do a podcast. This will be fun. And like, didn't really realize how much work it takes to like produce a quality audio.
In the episode, I said along for the ride at least 5 times.
Yeah. And I said like a lot. And I mean, it just like listening back, it's kind of like cringy, you know? And I just, Charles Cullen.
You said
is,
like in the last 2 sentences at least 3 times.
Okay. And I,
see,
at this
so
point,
we've had some growth. Yeah. But not all.
Not a lot, though. Let's be honest. I feel like our chemistry was there. Like, it was a great, you know, way. The introduction is great, but the case deserves a little bit more depth and a little bit of a better look. So I think what we're going to do is do a revisiting of Charles Cullen in either 2 or 3 parts in the coming weeks.
I think you'll just see here and there. We feel like now that we've learned and now that we've grown,
we can do it better.
You might just see a redo.
Yeah.
A deeper dive of the bigger cases.
Yeah.
And a little less
of the
young
crap.
Inexperienced Devin and Kate.
Yeah, and a little bit more of the
more refined.
That exactly.
We've
That's
aged
a good...
like fine wine. With that.
So your creature, all million of you, you are a Baku, which...
A Baku?
Stay with me.
Is that like the toy Bakugan?
No, but cool association, maybe. We are both boy moms.
Yeah.
We're both boy moms. So you guys are Bakus, and they are from Japanese folklore. They're made up of leftover parts of animals that were made by the gods. So like... They say they have like the trunk of an elephant, the tail of a cow.
Okay, but
like,
not the carcass.
No, not like, I'm like literal pieces of animals. No. Like think, you know, like patchwork, cool, like mixed anatomy animal. And then hold on though, this is the cool part. So they devour the nightmares of children.
Whoa.
And allow them to go back to sleep. So they are like the dream catcher creatures.
Baku. Will you guys hang out at my house later tonight?
Yeah, just make sure your boys sleep well. Yes. And I feel like I love that, actually. So
my oldest has a fear of the air conditioner right now.
Yeah?
And, you know, it's just, it made a noise.
Aww.
So I need some Baku to hang around.
Yeah, so if you guys could just, like, stop by Devin's house, that would be incredible.
I would appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. It's time.
Devinism, by the way.
For the reason we are all here.
Yeah, buddy.
We have a Devinism.
Devinism.
We also have a local case.
Really?
Which is interesting.
I don't actually know what we're doing.
I gave you some of the, I know. Did I even tell you?
I think you gave me like an outline, but however, I was like, I was never told what is happening.
We are going to discuss Kristen Gilbert, the angel of death in a Massachusetts Veteran Affairs hospital. This was the first case where I'm doing it and I'm like, I know where this is.
Really?
Like the towns that are mentioned, the places, I'm like,
because it's all like
this is weird.
An hour or two away from us. Wow.
This is weird.
Okay.
Like I was in this county today, by the way.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So it's that close.
I was
it's
in like this. Right I mean, there. I went to Massachusetts today. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was an hour away from the house, but yeah. I mean, I went to this county.
Wow.
Anywho, so here we go. Here so we it was go. A little weird doing my research, and I was like, huh.
Kristen Gilbert, you say. Let's do this. Let's dive
Kristen
in.
Kristen Gilbert. I'm good ready. Old KG.
Rare.
Kristen Gilbert was born originally Kristen Heather Strickland in Fall River, Massachusetts.
Ooh, Fall River.
Her birthday is November 13th, 1967. She was the oldest daughter of Richard and Claudia Strickland. Her father was electronics engineer and her mother a homemaker and part-time teacher.
Oh, okay.
Sounds like a perfect little life. Right?
Kind of, yes.
You and a sister, dad's working, doing some electronic stuff, probably at this time, in 1967. I mean, I don't know. Did we have cassette tapes? 8-tracks?
67? I think maybe 8-tracks, right?
Right. So, like, somebody I'm from thinking 60s. About, like, what let electronic us know. Engineers were doing at
right,
that point in time, right?
Yeah.
So, and mom was a homemaker and part-time teacher. Her childhood was known to be very beautiful. In her childhood, she was known to be very beautiful and very bright.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
She came from a good home. She took part in her school's math club.
Ooh, smarty.
And she went to prom with one of the brightest kids in school.
Ooh.
She even graduated from Groton Dunstable Regional High School.
This is literally so close to us.
In Groton, Massachusetts.
We are there all the time.
I'm there.
Wow.
From Groton, Massachusetts, she graduated 2 years early at 16 years old from
Damn.
High school.
So she's like so super she's bright, like, super
she's
smart.
She's like a savant.
Wow.
Kristen Savant.
Okay.
However, she was not perfect.
Okay.
She started to have some things in her teenage years that just kind of sounds similar to some of this other lovely people we've talked about over the years.
Mm-hmm.
As she entered her teenage years, friends and family kind of noticed that she often had a habit of lying and fabricated a lot of stories.
Interesting.
Because she was from Fall River, she often told people that she was related to Lizzie Borden.
Oh, yes. I knew you were going to say that. That's not something to brag about, even if you are. Like, no. What are you doing?
You would disassociate from that.
Yeah, you remove yourself from that whole narrative.
She's trying to fabricate this really cool like connection to a historical
so weird when people thing. Do that stuff.
However, she's a murderer, so she had a history of faking suicide attempts.
Oh wow.
To manipulate boyfriends that she to manipulate people. Excuse me, people, boyfriends, friends. She wanted that attention.
So she just was like crying out for attention.
One boyfriend claims she lied about attempting suicide by eating glass.
Oh, okay. Girlfriend. Yeah. This girl needs help, dude.
She, according to some of the records, she had made violent threats against others since she was a teenager.
Oh my God.
Friends and boyfriends claim that they were occasionally spat at, stolen from, and had scratches to their cars. She had also fabricated that her mother was a physically abusive alcoholic.
So it's really interesting that she is so incredibly bright and so well performing in school, but
socially not at all.
But I mean, she's able to build relationships because she has like boyfriends, right? And
correct.
Then friends. So it's almost not like she's on the spectrum. She just has like violent tendencies
correct.
And is attention seeking.
But then it's also like as they get to know her, she kind of moves on
right.
from a different area. She definitely tends to hide her past by moving around a little bit.
Wow. Okay.
In 1986, so this was a little bit after she didn't go right from being 16 years old into college. She took a little bit of a break, but in 1986, she enrolled in Bridgewater State College in Bridgewater, Massachusetts. After another fake suicide attempt, she was ordered into a psychiatric treatment by the Bridgewater State College officials.
Okay, I mean, that she clearly needs
some help.
Something.
She needs some help. So, again, in trying to avoid this current problem, because they order her to treatment in the psychiatric facility, in 1987, she transfers to Mount Wachusett Community College in Gardner, Massachusetts.
Right freaking next door to us.
Wild. It's like 20 minutes from the house.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this was creepy researching.
Yes, yes.
So she's like, okay, well, this school, you know, gets me admitted to psychiatric facilities. I'm transferring to Mount Wachusett.
So it's time to move on. Got mm-hmm. it. Aww.
And then from there, she transfers to Greenfield Community College in Greenfield, Massachusetts.
And this is in the 70s now?
80s.
Or early 80s.
This is 80s.
So, like, they're record keeping and, like, they're, you know, they're not this sharing late, information between schools.
This is late
80s, schools.
Correct. Got yeah, it. It's late yeah. 80s, around the time we were born.
Okay.
So, at this point, so she graduates from Greenfield Community College eventually. So, she started at Bridgewater, went to Mount Wachusett, graduated from GCC. And again, I say GCC because I know that's what it's called because it's so
because
local.
we're familiar.
So it was then in 1987 that she took a job as a home health aide with the Visiting Nurses Association of Franklin County while finishing nursing school.
Oh, okay.
During her time as a home health aide, there are reports that she took a dislike to one of her patients.
Oh, okay.
This is really sad. It's stated that she cared for a young disabled boy and allegedly, I said allegedly, damaged 60% of his body by boiling his body.
No.
By putting boiling hot water all over his body.
No.
Yeah, she did.
This is a boy?
This is a young disabled boy that she was a visiting nurse for.
What?
Or visiting nurse aide, excuse me. Kristen claimed that he had been burnt by a hot bath.
Jesus Christ.
But charges were never filed. That's
freaking
why it is just at
me,
this
right,
point.
Don't you? Like
it's an
right
allegation.
Off the bat. Oh my God. Wow.
Finally, she graduates with her nursing diploma as a registered nurse in 1988. That's the same year that she marries her husband, Glenn Gilbert, okay. when they had eloped. So she had, oh, okay. had a relationship with Glenn and off they go.
Okay.
After her elopement, she took her first nursing job at a VA medical center in Northampton, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. This is where she worked for 7 years, and this is the basis of our whole story.
Oh, okay.
This is the only place she works as a nurse.
Okay.
So she works here for 7 years. This is the only place that she works at of the basis of the rest of the story that we're going to talk about. And then by 1993, Kristen and Glenn Gilbert had 2 children together.
Okay.
So it's finally like, okay, she's had a rough past, teenagehood. Touch and go, right? Very, very bright. Graduated young, but socially not awesome.
Has a good job.
There's allegations that she might have harmed a poor disabled child.
Oh God, how terrible.
But things are starting to look up.
Okay.
She's graduated. She's got her job full time. She's got her husband. And here we go.
Mm.
Early on in her career, she was established as one of the good ones.
Okay.
She showed strong nursing skills and was well-liked. She was the type that organized lots of work social gatherings with her coworkers and building a strong reputation.
Oh, so like super engaged, one
kind
of those.
Kind of different,
yeah.
you know, than, you know, when she was in high school.
Sure.
She was known, this is important, to organize the yearly Secret Santa. Hello, that's very important.
Oh, oh.
And organized, she also organized drives for disadvantaged families around the holidays.
Oh, that's sweet.
She even was featured in a magazine titled VA Practitioner in 1990.
Interesting.
She really was on the rise. She always preferred to be on the code response team and performed well in high stress situations.
Ah. Uh-huh.
She got you caught that word preferred.
Preferred.
She always preferred to be on the code team.
Honestly,
however,
I,
she was also the nurse that they wanted there.
Yeah. And that's not to say that all that, because like I like that stuff too. I was into that when I worked in a hospital environment. I loved being part of the team that got to code people, but so that doesn't mean that all people are crazy. They're like that. There are adrenaline junkies out there that just
when
like
we
that.
Get further on down a little bit, I'll be interested when you're at the hospital if one of these things was factual there too.
Oh, okay.
So this first year of her career, she worked on the medical unit on the day shift, then she went to the night shift, and finally in 1991 she went to the evening shift in Ward 3 of the medical center. And this is important to know that it's really, this medical center treated our veterans.
Mm-hmm.
The motto was to treat those that had borne battle.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, okay, is this an acute hospital? But it's a little bit mixed.
Oh, okay.
It's a little bit mixed. Had some long-term patients, had a psychiatric ward.
Oh, okay.
And then also had a not super acute hospital, but like subacute.
Maybe subacute. Yeah. Okay. Good to know.
So they had a a mix of, and it was relatively small.
Okay.
So it was during the years of 1990 and 1993 that the death rates on her unit were tripling.
Whoa.
When she moved to the evening shift, the night shift deaths returned to their normal levels while the evening deaths rose.
And you said that this is like a medical unit, so sort of like a med surge or like a stepped up, like a
it's really
sort of like
it's
medical
not,
subacute.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe med surge type a little bit, but
got
not
it.
Much.
Okay.
Especially when I get into some of the victims, like they're not super, super, super sick.
Got it.
Because the death rates were tripling, at this point, some kind of things are kind of joking. So that some of her coworkers at this time were jokingly giving her the name of Angel of Death, just because, man,
you have bad luck. You're the
Kristen's
black cloud.
Always around.
Yep.
You leave the night shift, that goes back to normal.
Yep.
Look at evenings. You know,
like, interesting how it works.
Her skills, however, at the time were at the height of her career, and she was wanted at every emergency.
Mm-hmm.
I even have that nurse too. Like, I'll take you at any emergency.
Yes. Yes.
You know, like. You just do.
Sure.
It was during this time on the evening shift that Kristen met James Perot. He was a Persian Gulf War veteran who was a police officer at the hospital.
Oh.
Eventually, casual flirting between Kristen and Perot had blossomed into a full-on extramarital affair.
Oh, shit, Kristen.
Yeah. Coworkers began to, after some time, kind of took notice and were taken aback by their unprofessional displays of affection.
Okay.
There was a rule at the hospital, and this is what I was interested if this was where you worked. There was a rule at the hospital that a police officer had to be present at every emergency situation.
Oh. No.
Again, this is in the 90s, so I didn't know.
That's interesting.
Police officer, security officer, I don't know.
So when a code bell goes off, at least when it happened in my setting, which they did, so security did respond. As part of the code team, more so for crowd control and to direct people where they needed to go.
So I think that's similar.
Okay.
Okay. So maybe they had police officers more formal than security.
Got it.
Like, you know,
yep.
Again, it's in the 90s, so the roles might have changed
a little bit.
But so then it sounds similar. You know, it wasn't that they were there, like maybe part of helping with the documentation or just like, you know, kind of
like
on guard.
Yeah. Just like having extra hands and.
So because this meant that James was at every code that Kristen was at, they were often like, they started to notice like that they were definitely not very professional during some of the code situations.
Oh.
Coworkers were noticing how the two were looking googly-eyed at each other during codes. And one day they even noticed that they were playing footsie.
No, they were not.
During one of the
codes. Oh, you stop it right now. That is gross.
So even though clinically she's at the height of her career, This is where the same time where suspicions of her murders were beginning to unravel.
Gross.
It's like she has this very short peak.
Yeah.
And then boom.
Whoa. Okay.
Kristen was bad mouthing her husband at the hospital, as things were starting to come out about James. You know, she was trying to make excuses for why she was doing it. Right. So she was telling James and others coworkers that her husband was physically abusing her, and her husband denied any of those claims.
Okay.
It was that November that Glenn believes that Kristen tried to kill him. He believes that his food started to taste funny. So she thinks that it was being poisoned.
What?
This was interesting, and I was trying to pick it, but I'm also like, okay, it's in the 90s. But so during the time that his food was being tasted funny, he was hospitalized.
Oh.
So he was hospitalized, and it shows that he was hospitalized for low sodium and low potassium.
Mm.
So the question is, was he being poisoned with diuretics?
Oh, maybe. Interesting.
So the part that I'm struggling a little bit here with is that during the hospitalization, Kristen stated that she was so dissatisfied with her husband's care that he was receiving. She insisted on drawing labs on him herself.
No, this seems like more of a I want attention and to control everything.
I feel like. So this scenario that I'm about to say did happen, but I'm a little fuzzy as to. If Glenn had these suspicions, why didn't he stop her? Why didn't he say something to the hospital staff?
Exactly. If he's considering that she's doing something to him, then why is he allowed? I mean, also, he's sick. And in a hospital bed. So I don't know how debilitated the man is at the moment. So I guess I don't know.
So she told Glenn first that before drawing her blood, she needed to flush his veins.
Okay.
How many times have you flushed veins before you've drawn blood? Anybody?
God. You don't do that because it dilutes things, but.
So she injected him with a clear liquid. He did try to fight her.
Okay.
But she had him pinned down with her hip and her body.
Oh.
And then by the time the staff came into the room, he was passed out.
Oh, my God. Oh.
Kristen tried to say that he passed out from the sight of the needle.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So, again, back in the 90s, I would hope, I mean, right now, a spouse or family or anyone that's not hospital staff would not be able to do any of this.
God, no, I can't imagine.
Never, so.
Even though it was the 90s.
But the police report, the police reports say that she potentially tried to poison him with potassium.
Wow.
But they were unable to confirm, and so she was never charged with their attempted murder.
Okay.
With his attempted murder.
So the police did get involved, though, and they were looking mm-hmm. into it because they realized mm-hmm. that this was fucked up. Okay.
Soon after this event, this was in November, she received an ultimatum from her boyfriend, James. And so Kristen called Glenn and said, guess what? I'm leaving you. He was okay. probably like, good riddance.
Bye. Can you stop poisoning me now?
See ya.
Yep.
She filed for divorce just before Christmas, and she left her children behind. Shocked?
Wow.
Anybody?
Left. It
also seems to be a pattern on some of these.
Some of these,
tends to leave the kids behind.
It's a narcissism thing, mm-hmm. I think, where they, I mean, literally, there's just no value in anything.
After she filed for divorce, she leaves the kids in the house, but she does file for custody.
Because she wants to
however she lost
pull
that.
One over on her ex. She's being a narcissist.
Mm-hmm. It was during this time of her career that during the divorce, that the investigations into the rising deaths formally began.
Mm-hmm.
Her coworkers, so it's going to be a little choppy for a minute, but her coworkers started the investigation early on, just kind of observing and trying to like gather thoughts, data, like what's happening.
So they're not really suspecting her necessarily, but they're noticing the volume of...
The coworkers are suspecting her a little bit.
Okay.
But they don't have anything formal.
Got it.
They are recognizing how often Kristen is at the at all the desks and all the codes and
whatnot.
Got
it. Okay.
So they are kind of like, what's going on here? But again, mm-hmm. there's no concrete proof yet.
Got it.
So I want to take a minute to talk about some of her victims.
Okay. Yes.
Because again, they're at various points in her career. Some things highly suspicious and other mm-hmm. things were just, that was weird. Henry Hudon was a 35-year-old Air Force veteran. He was previously cared for at home by his mother and his sister prior to going to the VA home. Henry was moved inpatient to the VA hospital every 8 or 9 months or so, as he suffered from a TBI and paranoid schizophrenia.
Oh, poor guy.
It was during this current stay, his last stay, he was morose, quiet, but sometimes violently aggressive. Henry was telling his family that patients in Ward C were being killed there for no reason. Ward C was where Kristen
was working.
It's quoted on the day of his death. Mom, I don't want to die. Please don't leave me here.
Oh, no.
He died later that evening.
No. Oh, his poor mom.
His family demanded an autopsy where the death certificate stated that he died by a series of cardiac arrests. And it was determined that the last attack was so large that his heart had expanded through his chest cavity.
What?
Yes.
What?
I know. I read that and I was like, are we sure? Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Well, yeah. Stanley Jagodowski was a Korean War veteran. He was at the VA for aftercare after bowel obstruction surgery.
Oh, okay.
During his stay, a different LPN, saw the RN Kristen go into Stanley's room with a syringe. That appeared odd to her, as all of his meds were ordered for PO.
Oh. Okay.
The LPN overheard, this part kills me.
Aww.
The LPN overheard, ow, it hurts, you're killing me, from Stanley's room.
No.
This did not go reported initially, not until the investigations were ramping up.
Oh my God.
Hearing yelling on the units is not completely unusual, as patients are in various mental states.
Sure.
I would hope nowadays, as we're, you know, talking about abuse prevention mm-hmm. and everything, that you hear how it hurts, you're killing me.
Somebody
you go into
pokes
a room,
their head in.
You go into a room and yeah. stop. Now, this LPN is unnamed. However, she the research that I was kind of reading and a podcast that I was listening to were kind of like stating like, well, there's that hierarchy of an LPN, the RN is a supervisor to the LPN.
Yes. Yeah, so there's
it's
that
difficult
inherent
to report or, you know, some based on your authority,
yes,
you know, someone who's
course.
More authority than you. So
it just breaks my heart too that to anybody, this would be horrific, but like these are veterans.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
correct. And look at how young some of them are.
Yes. Oh, yes. God.
So,
this is heartbreaking. Yeah. Oh.
Kenneth Cutting was blind and immobile from multiple sclerosis.
Oh,
he
God.
Was very friendly with the staff and well liked.
Oh,
he was one that
God.
Lived there. He was there. Long term.
Got it. Oh.
One of the unit's favorite patients, and even Kristen loved him. There was one day on her shift that Kristen went to one of the doctors and stated that she'd heard Ken wasn't doing well and asked if she could go home early if he dies.
What?
After this discussion, Ken went into cardiac arrest and died of a massive heart attack.
Okay. That's just fucking ballsy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how? Okay.
You stunned?
I mean, yeah.
Can I keep going?
Like, let me just, no.
You want to digest that for a
real
minute?
Real quick. I'm just going to make sure I make arrangements for my early dismissal.
Because I'll be sad about
before it. Before I inject this man with whatever the hell I'm injecting this man with so that I can make sure I can get out a couple hours early because that's my priority in life.
Yeah, because I'll be really sad.
Oh, God, this is a lot, Devin.
You're welcome.
Uh-huh.
So these are a few of the deaths where the theory starts to develop with her colleagues.
Okay.
Hello. That Kristen is purposely overdosing her patients to deliberately put them in a code situation.
Imagine realizing this as a nurse.
To impress James.
Ew.
That's the theory that's behind
Ew,
this.
Ew, really? Ew.
Again, all evidence right now is circumstantial and therefore not yet reported. It's around this time when missing doses of epinephrine were further discovered.
Ooh.
And then later, after investigations and whatnot, the hospital eventually changed its policy how it handled drugs. Again, this is the 90s. Drugs are treated in a very
yes.
different way. They don't have a lot of electronic Pyxis to
yes.
get their stuff out
yep.
of.
So there's not as much of an electronic record yes. with the meds.
Edward Skawira, excuse me, okay. admitted to Ward C ICU. He was a 69-year-old World War II Army veteran. I have a soft spot for World War II
I know,
veterans.
I know you do, I know.
And he was in and out of the VA home for chronic alcoholism.
Okay.
Kathy Ricks is one of the nurse colleagues that had been on to Kristen and the rising suspicion.
Ooh.
She kind of started the whole colleague suspicion.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy was the first, Edward's nurse on when he was admitted. But Kristen was the only nurse on when he died of a massive heart attack. He did have cardiac issues historically, but Kathy had taken specific inventory of meds prior to leaving her shift when
uh-huh.
Mr. Skawira was admitted.
Astute. Very astute.
3 ampules of epinephrine had been present prior to his death.
Ooh.
After his death, all 3 were missing. Later on in the night, a sharps bin had been found with 3 broken ampules in there.
Okay, there you have it. So then the epinephrine thing makes sense with the injection of the clear liquid and all of a sudden people are dying. And then it's with the autopsy finding of the enlarged heart, too,
mm-hmm.
that is starting to make more sense.
So I want to talk about some of her colleagues.
Yes.
So I introduced Kathy, Nurse Kathy Ricks. So she was the one who started noticing disturbing trends over the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of part of that group that was just like, oh, look, angel
yeah.
of death. She started noticing issues and patterns in regards to epinephrine. As you, Kate just said, epinephrine is a colorless, odorless liquid used to treat heart conditions, heart problems, and asthma. Out of 135 doses of epinephrine, 88 couldn't be accounted for.
Wow.
Initially, with the trends on the unit, Kathy wasn't initially worried as mortality rates go up and down. However, she eventually confided in two co-workers to be like, guys, help me out here.
Okay.
John Walt and Renee Walsh had started their own looks along with Kathy.
Okay.
And they're informal to just be like, what's going on? Because again, everything right now is still circumstantial.
Yes.
Their findings eventually, thankfully, were reported through the chain of command. And on February 17th of 96, a formal investigation began.
Good.
It was quickly narrowed down to one target of Kristen. Mm-hmm. That was very quick. State police were assigned into the homicide investigation. And they kind of also noted that, like, this was really interesting homicide investigation, kind of like some of our other stories that we talked about. Like, they're not dealing with crime scenes that are blood spatter.
No, this is all where's the murder weapon? Different.
And right now, because a lot of the people died, they're having to look at autopsy records. Yes. They're having to look at documentation.
Yes.
Some of the staff reports.
Staffing records, building all those timelines. And the fact that epinephrine is her drug of choice really does kind of help that out, honestly, because it's incredibly fast acting, incredibly short half-life drug. So it's like, you know, you give it and it acts immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's often given in code situations.
That's part of what I get later into some of the other stuff, too, yeah. Mm-hmm. Is part of why, okay, this is what she killed them with also, but it's also used in codes.
Yes.
So, like, any traces of it, if it was given during a code.
Exactly.
It was explained.
Yes.
You know what
100%.
I mean? So it was like.
Yep.
A help and a hindrance.
And then what it does is, I don't know, do you get into like what
you could
it does?
Go ahead. I wanted to save that part for you.
Oh, thank you. So epinephrine is often given during code situations because what it does is it increases heart rate dramatically. And it can also vasoconstrict and increase blood pressure. So those people that are having a very low or no heart rate or have a very low or no blood pressure or are essentially pulseless. All dead people get epi is what they say in code situations.
Right.
So if someone's getting CPR, you better be busting out the epi and you're going to get rounds of epi. And it's given during a classic code situation, but you can give epi every 2 to 4 minutes, really, mm-hmm. Over and over again until they say, you know what, we've given this enough tries. We need to call it, or they actually see a little bit of a response and they're getting back a blood pressure or a heart rate. So if given to somebody who has adequate blood pressure and heart rate, it can cause vasoconstriction and tachycardia to the point where, I mean, you can, immediately, you know, have a stroke, have mm-hmm. a heart attack or some similar type of medical emergency, and many times is not survivable if you get a big enough dose. And it sounds like she's using multiple ampules
at
a time.
So with the asthma and allergic mm-hmm. reactions,
yes,
you know, those EpiPens,
yes, exactly,
save yep. lives in
100%.
You know,
they do, yes,
so.
Absolutely. They take care of that shock response when an allergic reaction situation. Again, very short half-life, but in shock, your blood pressure drops to almost undetectable levels and it vasoconstricts so that it gives you back some blood pressure
right.
and keeps you stable. But again, if that's happening when you have normal blood pressure, it shoots your blood pressure up, shoots your heart rate up, and
puts you into cardiac
makes
arrest.
You very unwell or dead.
Kristen became aware of the investigation.
Okay.
She hadn't been charged at this point, but she was aware.
But she was aware that, like, specifically it was on her too, right?
Mm-hmm. So she decides to apply for sick leave after mm-hmm. she claimed a mentally ill patient harmed her and twisted her shoulder.
That's going to make it all go away. Just
so
stay
now
home
she's
for a couple
on,
of weeks.
Now she's on leave with a workers' comp pay.
Okay, so, nice.
While they're investigating her.
So
the hospital let her go on leave as they felt it was safer for their patients for her to not be present.
Yep, bye.
Hello,
yep.
Duh.
Mm-hmm. Let's see what happened to the mortality rates while you're on leave, by the way.
Mm-hmm,
exactly.
Her boyfriend, James, he was cooperative in the investigation, but he did begin to become guarded towards Kristen.
Mm.
Like, he was cooperative, but, like, he became guarded when it came to answering questions about her.
Oh, so he was kind of getting
also
defensive.
Towards her a little bit.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
And then, so the investigation started in February, and by June of 96, Kristen was coming completely unraveled.
Oh,
she was purposely overdosing on drugs and getting checked into mental institutions.
Oh, no.
During the investigation, during one of her admittance into a psychiatric ward, I'll get there for a second, but he did eventually put a restraining order on Kristen.
Mm.
She had spiraled so much at times that his car was keyed and his windows had been spray painted. So he's like, you know what? They're looking into her for murder. She's kind of acting a little not so good right now.
Yes.
So,
yes.
During one of her manic episodes when she was admitted to the psychiatric ward, she did make phone calls to James where she stated, "You want to know? I killed him."
No. I mean, I know. But like, wow. Mm-hmm. Ugh.
Her ex was also participating in the investigation, Glenn. And he goes, you know, there's just this cabinet in my house.
Oh, no.
He's like, you know, Kristen left it behind. It, you know, it hasn't been long since we've been divorced.
Oh,
but,
shit.
Maybe you guys should take a look.
Uh-oh. What was in the cabinet,
in
Devin?
There, the officers found the Handbook of Poisons.
We literally have a poison book. It's
literally what we have right here is a poison book.
Oh, my God. There was a Handbook of Poisons in her cabinet treasures.
And the pages about epinephrine had been marked.
Oh.
Fold it over. Apparently that's called dog-eared. Did you know that?
Yes.
Wow, I learned something new.
Okay.
So even more so from here on out, things are spiraling for Kristen, and she goes completely off the rails.
Yep.
This part, I was like, what is happening? Like, she's batshit crazy.
Yep.
She goes to a toy store. In September of 96, she goes to a toy store and buys a Talk Girl Jr. Wait, do you remember those? The voice
girl?
Recorders that changes your voice?
Oh my God,
a talk
like from
girl
Home
and a
Alone?
Talk boy? Yes.
Oh my God, the talk boys from Home Alone. Those were so cool.
This will also take you back. So she used this device and called Star 67 to disguise
Ooh,
her phone number.
Oh my God, girl.
And she used this device to disguise her voice. She initially leaves a message on Glenn's phone and she says, I just wanted to say goodbye for the last time.
Oh my
goodbye.
God.
Later that day, she calls into the VA with a bomb threat while James was on duty.
With a talk boy, talk girl.
She stated that they had 2 hours to evacuate the veterans and called multiple times over the next few hours. I saw the picture of the talk girl and talk boy and I was like, bringing
it
back.
It's not funny, but
we
like,
are bringing it back.
What is going on in this girl's brain?
Later on in the investigation, wow. After they seize it, I'll get to where they seize it in a second, but she says they were for my nephews.
Shut up, lady.
She
just
doesn't have any.
Stop. Yeah.
She has.
She doesn't have any.
She doesn't
nephews.
Have any.
Girls, stop.
They
Gross.
Get James to participate in the investigation. And so during a time when she was on surveillance, she has James tell her that he's going to be at the hospital from 5 to 7 that night. And Kristen falls for it. Ugh. And so while she's being watched, she's caught making a call from a phone booth with the talk boy or
Ooh.
Boy to James when he told her that he was going to be there doing another bomb threat.
Ooh, okay.
This allowed them to seize the toys from her apartment.
Yep.
Calling it toys is just, it's hilarious.
This is
they
ridiculous.
Seized the toys from her apartment and she was charged with felony for threatening a bomb threat. She was released into the custody of her parents on parole and was facing a 15-month sentence.
Wow.
She was convicted of this crime in 1998.
Oh, okay. All right.
And so the bomb threat. So now she's behind bars for the rest of this investigation.
Good.
While she was incarcerated for the 15-month sentence of the talk boy escapade, two of her victims were being exhumed. Have you ever heard of this? So there was question. If there were preservatives in epinephrine that allowed it to still be present in vitreous fluid and had ability to be tested.
Really?
Did you ever heard of that?
No.
Right. It's like, it goes so quick, like you said, that half-life.
Yeah.
That it's in and out of the body.
But it stays present in vitreous fluid.
But there's something where
fluid.
It could be, however.
For those of you that don't know, that's the fluid in the eyeball.
Right.
That's fascinating.
Isn't that something?
Wow.
So, however, that wasn't really helpful here because it was inconclusive results.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, again, most of them had epi for also
right.
because they were in cardiac arrest.
Right,
so,
right, right, right. Yeah.
But the results didn't really say yay or nay.
Side note, I just looked her up because sometimes I like to look up, like if I don't know about mm-hmm. somebody, she looks like a foot. So
she looks like a foot. Yeah. However, when she's arrested, her mugshot, look at her when she's a teenager.
Ooh, was she gorgeous? I mean, you said she was gorgeous. So mm-hmm. like, of course she was gorgeous.
You got to find a picture of her as a teenager.
Okay, I'm looking.
She beauteous?
Yeah, gorgeous.
Yeah,
gorgeous.
She's nice and she's very 80s looking.
She is very 80s with the 80s fluke hair.
Mm-hmm. But she's beautiful.
But she looks like a foot in her mug shot and she yes. is a foot.
10 years later, she's a foot.
As a person, she is also a foot. So fuck her.
So after the autopsies, charges were brought against Kristen and they convened a grand jury. So the grand jury was there to determine if there was enough evidence to proceed to a trial. And they did this mostly because, again, still, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence. And so they were trying to see if they had enough to indict.
Okay.
Did they have enough to go to trial? Because there's still no smoking gun.
Right.
There's no eyewitness.
Right. No eyewitness. We've run into that so many times. Yeah. Right. No physical evidence.
So this was interesting that there was a lot of talk. I was listening and there was a lot of talk about statistics and hypothesis testing that was put in to bring this thing to trial.
Oh.
And I'm not going to bore you with the math, but it was really interesting.
Okay.
Basically, and I'm not even going to say bore you with the math, but I barely understood it.
Okay.
Essentially.
Fair. Yeah.
They were doing formulas. They brought in statisticians for the grand jury that basically said, P and D, like they were going over the rates of how many people died, but that were also treated.
Yeah.
And how often Kristen was on duty.
So like statistically, what's the likelihood of it being literally anybody else?
Correct.
Got it.
Correct.
Oh, interesting.
That's what they were doing. And then they came to percentages of what your risk were of dying while Kristen was on duty.
Yes.
And stuff like that. So it was really, really, really interesting.
Wow. Okay.
And basically, the result of this statistical analysis was that there is a 1 in 100 million chance.
Wow!
1 in 100 million chance that the high death rate when Kristen was on duty is just pure coincidence.
So it is almost, almost impossible
that it was just
for
pure
that
coincidence
to be a coincidence
because of how high all the deaths were in correlation to when she was on versus not on.
That's so fascinating.
It was really interesting. It was a little bit over my head.
Yeah. Well,
but it was very interesting.
That's pretty cool, though. That's pretty cool.
I did not like biostatistics
in
college.
Good for them. Oh, no, that was the worst. That was the worst.
So the statistics were only presented to the grand jury to help satisfy that there was enough evidence for an indictment, but they didn't present it to the actual trial because they also felt like there was a little bit too much room to argue with a statistician.
That's fair.
But basically, some of the headlines in newspapers were math helped bring a serial killer to trial.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
So the trial went from November of 2000 to January 2001.
Okay.
This, by the way, was like the first 4 months of our friendship.
Whoa.
When this was going down. This was the year we met.
It was written in the fucking stars, I'm telling you.
While Kristen was going down.
Yes.
The prosecutors were seeking after the death penalty. Mm-hmm. Now, it was interesting because Massachusetts didn't have the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
However, because this was taking place at the VA, it made it a federal agency. And therefore, because she killed veterans, they were trying to go after the death penalty.
Aha.
And so this was very rare for Massachusetts.
Yes. I remember something similar with Swango, how the FBI and the government got heavily involved because some of his crimes took place in the VA, which was a federal building.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
VA hospital staff members speculated that Gilbert may have been responsible for 350 or more deaths.
That is massive.
And more than 300 medical emergencies.
Oh, my God. What?
The prosecutor in her case, Assistant U.S. Attorney William Welch, asserted that Gilbert used these emergency situations to gain the attention of her then boyfriend.
Mm, gross.
Remember, the hospital rules required that the hospital police was present at any medical emergency. James ended up testifying against her, saying that she confessed at least one murder to him by the phone when she was hospitalized. Her defense attorney, David Hoos, claimed reasonable doubt based on a lack of direct evidence.
Mm-hmm.
The defense also tried to create an argument of malicious professional jealousy against her coworkers. They're just jealous because I was on point and bullshit.
Yeah, bullshit is right.
During the trial, William Boutel was a psychiatrist who served as chief of staff at the Northampton VA Medical Center. He had testified that his theory that she created the medical crisis and situations to display her proficiency as a nurse. At the trial, prosecutors said she had a large kitchen knife in an. So then they're kind of going into, at the trial, they're going into her history of psychotic behaviors.
Oh, okay.
At the trial, prosecutors said she used a large kitchen knife in an assault in Greenfield, Massachusetts, back in 1988.
Okay.
Prosecutors said she tried twice to murder a person by poison in November of 95.
She's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
She's very prolific and just willy-nilly with just fucking poisoning everyone, throwing knives everywhere.
Prosecutors said that Kristen tried to poison a patient at the VA hospital on January 28 of 96, and that she caused a medical emergency by removing a patient's breathing tube at the VA hospital on January 30th of 1994.
Whoa, okay. Yikes.
Prosecutors said that Gilbert abandoned a patient undergoing cardiac arrest on November 9th of 1995. And then asked another nurse to accompany her on a check of patients. Prosecutors said she waited until her colleague independently spotted the patient's difficulty before raising an alarm. Gilbert forced an untrained colleague to use cardiac defibrillation paddles on a patient during a medical emergency on November 17th of 95.
What?
By refusing to use the equipment herself.
Why?
Prosecutors said Gilbert threatened the life of at least one person verbally and physically in July of 96.
Wow.
And then they also then brought up the case of the disabled boy in when she was a visiting nurse.
So it's interesting that she was allowed to just like keep doing her thing when like she was exhibiting like really
such
bizarre,
erratic behavior.
Erratic is the right word.
And I think some of it, however... Here we are in 2024.
Yes.
They do some wonderful and amazing things.
They do.
But we do know, it's pretty known that like veterans, there's delayed care.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of red tape.
Yes, there is.
To get some of the benefits that they absolutely deserve.
Agreed.
And so they absolutely deserve this free medical mm-hmm. care. They absolutely deserve all of this stuff. But it has to be done at the VA. It has to be done here. You have
yes.
to go through this process.
Yep.
You have to get authorization, mm-hmm. you know. There's so many steps.
There are a lot of steps.
To be able to get to that care.
Yes.
And that's in 2024.
Yes.
In the 90s, you know, it's a VA hospital. They're a system that's underfunded.
Mm-hmm.
What was their funding like in the 90s?
Right.
What was their staffing like?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it's like, I didn't want to, like, it's just, I don't know what their staffing was like. I don't know certain things, but.
Right. There's a lot we don't know.
There's
here.
A lot that we do know about the VA medical care
mm-hmm.
that, especially 30 years ago during this time frame,
mm-hmm.
you can kind of be like, all right, I can see that.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's not necessarily, I mean, a little bit of that is system wide, but also there are VA medical centers that at least in this day and age are. Wonderful.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I know a lot of veterans who speak very highly of the VA
yes.
and say
yes.
they've funded things that I, mm-hmm. that I, my friends would never get through their own
Correct.
Insurance.
Absolutely.
Like there are things that I get for completely at no cost to
and
me
we,
because
and
I'm
we
a
have
veteran.
Probably eight people where we work that,
yes.
that the VA is fully covering their care.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Covering that room and board for their long-term
yeah.
stay.
Exactly.
There's so much good things
so there's
that come
so
from
many
it,
good things.
But I think it is a fact that there's a lot of barriers
I agree
to be able
completely.
To get that care.
Like you said, there's a lot of red tape. There's a lot of steps.
Yes.
And that's just, it's just a part of that
the system.
System.
Yeah.
yeah. It's an
Absolutely.
Inherent part of that system, but mm-hmm. it's not necessarily a bad system.
Right.
Yeah. Just putting that
so
out there.
So I think that had a little bit of a play into why this
yes.
went on for so long.
Yeah, maybe. You're right.
So March 14th, 2001. A federal jury did convict Gilbert on three counts of first-degree murder,
Woo!
One count of second-degree murder, and two counts of attempted murder.
Mm-hmm.
Again, though Massachusetts didn't have capital punishment, her crimes were committed on federal property and thus subject to the death penalty.
Aha.
Prosecutors did have an attempt to secure a penalty of death, but it was essentially she was... life in prison.
Uh-huh.
She did not get the death
penalty. Didn't get the death penalty. Got it.
They did try to aggravate the reasons for the death penalty, which
mm-hmm.
also included the bomb threat that she
oh.
did on federal property.
Yep.
The defense introduced evidence of mitigating factors, but there was also like the well-being of her two children.
That's true.
That
yeah,
kind of went
got
into
kids.
Play.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So... After 2 days of deliberation, they chose life imprisonment and not the death penalty.
Okay.
She was sentenced to four consecutive life terms without the possibility of parole, plus 20 years.
Wow. I mean, that's a lot, but it's still not enough.
Correct. She was transferred from a prison for women in Framingham, Massachusetts, to Fort Worth, Texas.
Ah. Uh-huh.
And that's where she still remains.
Interesting.
In July of 2003, she initially appealed. So in 2001, she appealed mm-hmm. her case. However, in 2003, she dropped her appeal for a new trial after a U.S. Supreme Court ruled that this, if she had reopened it, it would allow prosecutors to still pursue the death penalty
mm.
on a retrial.
Okay.
So she's like, okay, I guess we're going to let that go.
Sure.
I'll stay alive in prison for the rest of my life.
Wow.
And that is where we end Kristen Gilbert.
Oh my God. That was
the angel
such
of death.
A good one. Wow.
For veterans.
Crazy.
I have a soft spot for veterans.
No, me too. That's why this is like, I mean, again, for anybody, this is horrifying for this to happen to any human being. But like the fact that they're veterans just adds that layer of just.
Because a lot of what they were dealing with in the hospital, too.
Like psychiatric issues, yeah. PTSD, like things that are very things that are such a very real and prevalent concern in the veteran community that we see a lot too. And mm-hmm. that's just, you know, it's a vulnerable population, that mm-hmm. particular population,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the psychiatric issues and that need the psychiatric care. And that's just heartbreaking.
Absolutely.
It's so sad.
It's another person that's, you know, choosing their victims that are just so vulnerable.
Just victimizing the most vulnerable. Like that gentleman that had MS and was in long-term care. Give me a fucking break.
Correct.
Give me a fucking break.
Mm-hmm. And the 35-year-old who was a paranoid schizophrenic and had a TBI.
Allegedly the young man
mm-hmm.
who was profoundly disabled that she took mm-hmm. care of at home that suddenly got himself covered in boiling water.
He was a boy.
Not even a young man. So sad.
I think we can all safe to say that she sucks.
Okay, she sucks real bad.
She sucks.
She's kind of the worst.
Yeah.
Yes.
I agree. Thank you for listening, everyone. I hope this was worth waiting for another every other Tuesday for.
I hope so.
I appreciate you listening, all your support. And if you want to continue to check us out, you can search for us on Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can find us on YouTube by searching Med Crimes Podcast. Sorry, that took a minute to come out of my face.
I.e. your mouth. You can search for us on Instagram at Med Crimes Podcast.
If you wish to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/medcrimespodcast. Also, we have merch. Go to medcrimespodshop.com. It is fun. And also, Patreons, if you sign up to become a Patreon, you get 10% off with a special Patreon code. So take advantage of that. Woo, woo.
You can also send us any crazy stories, comments, suggestions at medcrimes@gmail.com.
We love hearing from you guys, and we love you guys.
We do. We love you so much.
Stay safe out there.
Bye.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to care for yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps, ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today for 10% off your first month.